Abbey 104.
Well, hello, good morning. It's Abbey 104 on Sunday morning, 11:06, and it's time for Folk Tales with me, Terry Bennett. And in the studio this morning is David Wone. David,
good morning
to you. And Dave, you are the president of the Yeovil Chamber, amongst other things.
For my sins, yes.
Well, I've got your cards in front of me, and that's one of them. And you're also a financial planning advisor.
Yes.
And you also play the guitar.
I do.
And we're going to sample that later.
Yes.
Absolutely. Great. Well, tell us, first of all, what does the Yeovil Chamber do?
Yeovil Chamber is a voluntary organisation consisting of business people. In Yeovil, we currently look after the interests of about 110 member businesses, and those businesses range from everybody, all manner of businesses across all sectors, from my own one-person industry where I sit at home in my pyjamas most of the day and work, right through to people such as Leonardo Helicopters. And in the middle of all that, there are, I think we have five of the regional law firms, five accountancy firms, a large proportion of small, medium enterprises. And essentially, we're a networking group for businesses to come together, create opportunity, help drive prosperity in the local area. But what sets us apart from most of the networking groups is that we have an outreach that extends to local and regional government and other stakeholders in the business community.
Okay. And how long have you been involved with the Yeovil Chamber?
I've been a member since 1996, and I joined primarily for the networking, and I stayed. And then about 3 years ago, February 2015, they said, "Would you like to run it?" And I had a wish list as long as my arm, a 15-point wish list of all sorts of things I wanted to do around Yeovil, and I set about doing that.
And you're gradually ticking them off, hopefully.
I tick quite a few of them off, actually.
So we'll hear a bit more about that later.
Okay,
you're also a financial planner.
I am, yeah.
That's a day job, so to speak.
That is, yeah. That pays the bills and gives me some sort of a lifestyle when I'm not doing all the rest of things. I've been a financial advisor now since 1986, after being made redundant from Westlands. Man and boy, 13 years at Westlands, and on the back end of the Heseltine affair, they made 300 people redundant, and one of those was me. But it was probably, in hindsight, it was probably the best thing they ever did for me. And I remember buying a diary at the time and writing, "This is the first day of the rest of my life," in that diary. And I found that while I was being interviewed for jobs, I actually enjoyed the interview process more than the prospect of the job that might have been on the end of that interview. So I thought, if I can get myself a job where I can get paid for talking to people, life's not going to be that bad. So I didn't want to be a journalist, and I fell into selling insurance. And it kind of went from there, really. Worked for a couple of insurance companies, and then went independent in 2000 and set up my own business, Yeovil Financial Planning, in 2003. And I'm currently unemployable, as they say, because there is a belief that if you stay self-employed for too long, you become unemployable.
I guess that's probably right.
And I've been sort of, I suppose, freelance, if you like, since 2003. And life's pretty good, actually.
Good to hear. Okay, Dave, we're going to come back and talk about your early life and how you came to be part of all of these things.
Okay.
But let's take your first record, and that is the Rory Gallagher. Why
yes.
this one?
Yeah, this was the one that ignited the passion for the guitar for me. This exploded into my head when I was 15 years old. I forget where it came from. I think there was somebody I knew, their father had a copy of Rory Gallagher's Live in Europe album, which was fresh off the presses back then in 1972. Golly, I'm giving my age away here. And the first track on the album was the one we're about to hear, and it completely blew me away. And the guitar that I bought when I was 13 and had gone in the loft promptly came out
again.
Of the loft,
right.
And I've been doing it for most of my adult
life.
It's
Rory Gallagher messing with the kid. Here it is.
You told me you love it. You told me a lie.
That's Rory Gallagher and Messin' with the Kid from 1972, as chosen by my guest in the studio, Dave Wone, president of the Yeovil Chamber. And you were saying, Dave, that was the reason why you got the guitar out of the loft.
It was, yeah. And several other people got their guitars out of the loft. I think
quite notable names, I think.
They were, yeah. I'm told that the Edge and Billy Gibbons and Brian May also heard that album, and it had kind of a similar effect on them. So it's a very powerful live album, and a powerful statement of somebody who knew his way around the guitar at a very early age.
We'll certainly talk a lot more about your musical interests as we go through, and okay. We've got a live track to look forward to. That'll be the next one, actually, so that's good. But let's go right back. You were born in Yeovil, weren't you?
I was, yeah, 1957, at Five Ways Hospital, which isn't there anymore. Son of a professional footballer. My dad had done the rounds during the 1950s, Tranmere Rovers, Liverpool, Bradford City, Leighton Orient and Yeovil Town. So he was kind of at the tail end of his footballing career, and then playing for Yeovil Town, and that's why I was born in Yeovil.
But football actually is a theme that runs through the family, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Dad's brother Alan played for Crystal Palace and Norwich City. My cousin Ian played 250 games for Nottingham Forest during the 1990s under Brian Clough. His brother Alan played for Stalybridge Celtic, and I, sadly, only played for Sherborne Town. So I nearly got paid to do it, but not quite.
All right. And mother was she also employed, or was she a housewife? Or?
She was, yes. She was sort of part housewife, part secretary. And she was actually the secretary of Henry Simon, who is the father of Luke Simon, who runs School in a Bag at Home Farm. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a family connection between us and Home Farm. So, yeah, mum was a shorthand secretary, and dad was an ex-professional footballer. Mum died in 2011, and my dad's still around, and he is, by way of a footnote to all that football stuff, he is officially the oldest living ex-Liverpool footballer.
Okay.
As endorsed by Radio Merseyside about 3 years ago. So as long as dad stays alive, he is the oldest living Liverpool footballer.
Very good. And you had one sister, I believe.
I do, yeah, Carol.
Yeah, okay. So early days were in Yeovil, and you went to school in Yeovil, presumably.
I did, yeah. Milford Infants, Milford Junior School, went on to Grass Royal, and then we had that comprehensive thing that happened during the mid-70s, and Grass Royal merged with Bucklersmead, and I went to Bucklersmead for the last 2 years. Finished up there and sort of fell into, like most people did back then, into an apprenticeship down at Westland Helicopters.
Okay, we'll get onto that in a moment. Tell me about school days. Were they happy days? Were you academically okay?
School days, I absolutely loved school. School was one of those things. It was full of people who were interesting, and teachers were the kind of people you could ask questions of them, and they'd give you answers all day if they had the time. I think these days I probably would have been labelled ADHD. I was into everything. I had this massive curiosity about everything in the world. Mum and Dad sadly weren't equipped to deal with a child that had ADHD, and so I was kind of left to my own devices, which was good. I've always been comfortable with my own company, but I think I just needed some direction and a challenge or two. Yeah.
You found some of those as life has gone by, haven't you?
As later on, yeah.
What were the early thoughts? Did you have any career aspirations in those days?
No. I came out of school with a grade 5 CSE in maths, which is...
Isn't the best, is it?
It isn't the best. It's one step away from a total failure. In hindsight, I'm pleased to say I can look back on that as a badge of honour, because... as you're probably aware, financial services involves a high degree of mathematics and number crunching and numerical skills. But I found once I was able to apply that that skill, the mathematics skill, I found it relatively easy. And while I was going through Westlands as an apprentice, I was an electrical apprentice, did electrical engineering, and became worked in on avionics systems on the aircraft. And again, that involved a high degree of algebra and equations, and something that I would have never been able to do at school. But again, because it was applied mathematics, I managed to just get along with it.
Makes a difference, doesn't it? So a footballing background, clearly. Were you a good footballer in your younger days?
I guess that would be for other people to say. I enjoyed it.
You played at school, presumably.
I did, yeah. I also played rugby at school. Didn't do a lot of cricket. That was a bit about it, really. Mainly football.
Ever any thoughts of doing that professionally?
Well, I did end up playing for Sherborne Town, a couple of games for Sherborne Town one year, and that's about the pinnacle of my footballing career. My dad said to me that I had all the skill but no passion for the game, and I guess he was right. And by then, the guitar was out and Rory Gallagher had been unleashed in my head and football got sidelined.
So tell us where the music came in then. Was that during childhood as well, presumably?
No, it wasn't. No, again, it was it was one of those, you know, I said earlier, I just needed some direction and some challenges. And I kind of drifted through school, even though it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience. And I met loads of people that I still see now. The music, when I heard Rory Gallagher playing, that kind of started some direction, and it started the lifelong passion for music.
That wasn't until you'd left school. That was during your 20s or so, was it?
I think I did my first gig in the year after I left school.
I see. Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so happy days, really, childhood days.
Yeah.
But there came a point when you had to leave school and find some employment.
Yeah.
But that took you towards Westerns. Why particularly that?
Well, as I said earlier, back in those days, Westerns was by far and away the largest employer in Yeovil. And my father had already worked there. And being an ex-professional footballer, he knew plenty of people around town and he just got me in the door. I don't even remember the interview, to be honest. It was kind of rubber stamped. And then I started an apprenticeship in 1974 at Westland Helicopters. And again, I loved it. I got a real passion for working on the helicopters, and I was privileged to work on a lot of those helicopters that we've seen on the TV and we see flying about the area. Yeah. And I think a lot of people that work at Westlands have that pride over a job well done, because they're world-leading helicopters. By way of ironic twist of fate and life coming around full circle, I'm actually in and out of Leonardo quite regularly these days.
In your new role.
Did an electrical engineering apprenticeship, started work on the production line at Westlands, and then it moved on to avionics, and then I got made redundant in 1986.
Okay, that's probably a good place to take your next track, which is your live track, isn't it? You're going to play for us, so
yeah.
I'll waffle on a bit while you just get ready.
Okay.
But this is a track called Just For One Day. Is it one you've written yourself?
It is.
Okay.
I was fortunate enough to go to New Zealand back in 2012, and while I was out there, we had a marvellous day on this beach facing the Pacific Ocean, and it's... And I just, in true rock and roll style, I just scribbled it down on the back of a chip wrapper or something, brought it home with me and turned it to this. And it's kind of one of the songs that I've become known for. People who know me know this song. And it's basically a tale about a perfect day, really.
Let's hear it. Yeah,
on a
Dave,
beach in New Zealand.
Yeah, go for it.
Called Just For One Day. Southern Cross, high in my sky, 12,000 miles, I'm high. There's nowhere further to fly. Fish are too lazy to play, winter's half a world away. Living, laughing, loving this day. Give it all up, just for one day, one day. Laying back, living a dream, pie and chips, their peaches and cream. Life was all as it seemed. My shadow cast short, I'm feeling fine. Seagull caught in the line. Life was out of our minds, our minds. Give it all up just for one day, one day. Give it all up just for one day, one day. We don't care where we are, now in time and space. We don't care where we are, now in time and space. Do I write a postcard to send, or save it through the eye of this lens? Make this day never end. Rolling back the thoughts of that day, half a world away, with the breakers and the spray. Give it all up just for one day, one day. Give it all up just for one day, one day. Time and space. We don't care where we are, now in time and space. Give it all up just for one day, one day. Give it all up just for one day, one day. Give it all up just for one day, one day.
Just for one day, written and performed by Dave Wone, who's my guest in the studio today on Folk Tales. Dave, that was absolutely marvellous. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Let's get back to the story, shall we?
Okie doke.
And yeah. You were in Westlands as an apprentice.
I was, yes.
And yeah, tell us about that. What were you, an electrical apprentice, you say?
Yeah, yeah. We're putting wires in helicopters, basically. But it was great. I loved working on the helicopters, and I love going into Westlands now, or Leonardo, or whatever they're called these days. And there's a smell about helicopters. An aircraft that you can't quite replicate anywhere else, and as soon as I smell that, it stirs up the memories. It was good fun working in there. Again, a little bit aimless. I had some direction because I needed to work to get paid, I guess. But again, it was a little bit of a square peg in a round hole, still lacking a bit of direction, and then fate intervened. In 1986, in the shape of the Heseltine affair, and
the much famed Westland crisis.
It was, yeah, yeah. I think Leon Britton and Michael Heseltine fell out, I think, famously over where the work should come from for Britain's helicopter manufacturer, and in the ensuing fallout, they made 300 people redundant, one of whom was me.
Okay. You said earlier that, with retrospect, that may have been one of the best things that happened to you.
Yeah.
And I guess that's often the case for some unexpected events in life, that maybe you wouldn't have chosen that path. Why do you say that now?
Because it taught me a thing about the real world. It taught me a thing about loyalty, and it taught me about how to that I needed to start taking responsibility with what I did, because I've been a bit aimless up to that point. One of the best things that Westlands did for me was they put me on an interview technique course, which allowed me to get control of being in an interview.
You were saying about this before.
Yes, and I actually enjoyed the interview process. I think I went for 14, 14 interviews and got offered something like 4 jobs off the back of it, purely because I guess I was in control of the interview. And that was one of my great lessons in life, was how to control myself and the situation when I'm in an interview. And I thought, if I can get a job where I can get paid for talking to people, life isn't going to be too bad. Didn't fancy being a journalist. That seemed like a dangerous occupation. And I fell into selling insurance.
So you applied for various jobs, as you were saying, and found that process reasonably entertaining. You got a job with an insurance company then?
I did, yeah.
That was just as a salesman?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and you did that for a little while?
That was great. I worked for Canada Life for 8 years, and the branch manager in Taunton, I don't know if he's still around, a chap called Peter Samways, he taught me pretty much everything I know about how to care for your clients, because that's where I'm at now. All I want to do is just help people with their money, and it's a pretty pure sentiment, but it underpins everything I do.
Service underpins everything.
It does. And I love my clients.
So how long did you sell insurance before you decided to branch out into other things?
That was from about 1986, about 10 years.
Okay. And you got married somewhere in the middle of this?
I did, yes. Yeah. I got married in 1988. My first daughter came along in 1989. Another one popped out in 1992. And they've grown up to be lovely, lovely children. I've got a stepson as well. But sadly, the marriage broke up in 2006, and life took another turn.
As it does.
So again, that was another learning curve, because it was quite acrimonious, and I fell into a little bit of a depression for a year or two. Ran up a huge credit card bill, got myself in a financial mess. But the thing is, once you've been to the bottom of the bottle, so to speak. By the way, folks, drink was not involved. When you've been to the bottom of the bottle and come out again, it's like a snake. It's like a snake bite. If you don't die from it, it makes you stronger. And again, it was a great learning process for me, making a mess of my finances and then pulling myself back out again. So,
all right. Yep. You were selling insurance, but presumably you decided that wasn't your longer term aspiration. Then you wanted to do it for yourself. So
you
branched out directly into setting up your own business, did you?
Yeah. The process started when I was, or the thought of doing my own thing started when I was selling insurance, because as an insurance representative, I was running around seeing lots of people, and all I felt like I was doing was just teeing up business for the independent financial advisors. And I thought, if I can get a job as an independent financial advisor, then I can talk to people properly about their finances instead of just selling products. Because frankly, sales was never going to be long-term for me. It was a means to an end. And I finally went independent in 2000, worked for a firm in Taunton, a firm called Lloyd & White. And the 3.5 years I spent there were probably the most fun I've ever had in a job. Hit target every year. The firm was that I was working for had a contract with the British Dental Association, and we were running all over the UK doing business for every dentist in the UK that phoned up, and the phone was ringing off the wall. It was on, and there was a great team there, great team ethic in the office. And here's a mark of what a great place it is to work. Several of the people I worked with in between 2000 and 2003 still there. So I'm guessing it's a good place to work.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, I got to the point where I thought, I need to do this by myself. I want to do this by myself. So I kind of agonized over it for 6 months, as people do. Anybody that's been in that precipice where you've got to jump from being employed to self-employed will know what I'm talking about here. And you kind of agonize over it, but you get to the point where you think, I've got to do this, and you've got to take a leap of faith, literally, because you're going from regular money, arguably not a great deal of security in that, because you can be made redundant, as I found out previously in my life, at any time, to a situation where if I didn't work and I didn't do it, I wouldn't eat. And that's the kind of mantra that I kept with me. I still keep it with me now, when I work. It's if I don't work, I don't eat. And that's a sharp focus for staying in self-employment.
It is a leap of faith, as you say, and one which many people will empathise with.
Yeah.
Going into financial services, it's perhaps even a bigger leap of faith because it's such a heavily regulated area, isn't it? So yeah. It's not as if it's sort of selling apples on a cart in Yeovil Market.
No.
There's a bit more to it than that, isn't it?
Yeah. It's,
that must have been a nightmare.
I was what's called a child of the financial services age. In other words, when I started selling insurance, the Financial Services Act had just come in, 1986, and what that did, it started to weed out all the bad people in the industry, and there were a lot of bad people in the industry. There are still a few around now, as we saw in 2008, 2009, with the debacle with the banks. But back then, it was open season. Back in 1986, so the Financial Services Act came in, and it just rumbled on from there. So the regulation, yes, is if I'm honest, is completely onerous. I honestly believe the Financial Conduct Authority have gone about this in a manner where they are trying to crack a walnut with a sledgehammer. I remember writing at the time, we had a review back in 2013 called the Retail Distribution Review for the whole of the financial services industry. And I remember writing to the then head of the Financial Services Authority, a guy called Hector Sands, and I wrote to him and I said, as long as you continue to treat all advisors like criminals and all our children, all our clients like school children, this isn't ever going to go away. And I don't honestly believe that things have improved. I think they've got worse. In fact, since that review in 2013, the industry's become quite... The industry now makes advisors charge a fee, and that in itself actually disenfranchises a lot of people who aren't used to paying for services. So I struggle with that, and the regulation is quite onerous, and I honestly believe, in summary on that, that the industry is in a bad place. That said, I love what I do. I love my clients, and I will always do the best for them. And as I said, the mantra for me is I just want to help people with their money. And I just try and keep the Financial Conduct Authority to one side, tick all the boxes, behave myself. But at the same time, my clients just need advice on their money. They don't need regulation.
OK, we could probably talk at further length on that. But you managed to negotiate all of those hurdles.
I did, yeah.
And form the business, which is still going strong.
Yeah, it was 2003.
This is Ival Financial Planning.
Yep.
And your slogan there is in partnership with you and your money.
Yes.
Yes.
That's it, literally. There is another strap line I have, which isn't on that card. It's called the extra pair of hands for your finances.
All right. And your client base is mainly personal? It's
mainly personal, mm-hmm. but because of the type of people that I move among, and always have tried to carve out a hole for myself when I was working for the insurance companies. It was quite difficult. But what I wanted to do was not have to see people in the evening. I wanted to see people during the day. And that got me in front of business people, and it got me in front of people who were running their own business. They were managing other people's businesses. And that's what got me into Yeovil Chamber initially, because in 1996 when I joined, I joined Yeovil Chamber just as an ordinary member, just to get more access to those sort of people.
Okay, that sounds like a great place to take your third track.
Okay.
Which is Led Zeppelin.
Yes.
Tell us about this.
This one. Everybody here is now expecting Dazed and Confused or A Whole Lot of Love, but not a bit of it. I love this track. It's on Led Zeppelin 3, and it features some really controlled blues work from all four members of the band, and an absolutely stunning vocal performance from Robert Plant, and the dynamics of the song are phenomenal. I love dynamics in music. By that I mean where it kind of goes quiet and then it goes loud and they pull it back. You probably heard that on the first track, the Rory Gallagher one, and this is no different. And this is from Led Zeppelin 3, and this is Since I've Been Loving You.
Okay, let's have it.
Thank you. That's right. How I will love you, darling, how I will love you, baby. My will love you, little girl, little girl. Baby, since I've been loving you, yeah. I'm about to lose my worry.
That's Led Zeppelin, Since I've Been Loving You, from 1970. And as Dave said, it's from the Led Zeppelin 3 album. My guest in the studio is Dave Wone, who is the president of Yeovil Chamber, amongst many other things. So, Dave, we've got to the point now where you've got a successful financial planning business.
Yep.
And 2015, I think you said, comes along. And, well, actually, that's when you took the presidency, wasn't it? You'd been involved with the Chamber for quite a while prior to that.
Yeah, 1996.
What made you pick that up?
Pick it up. It was because the kind of people that I was starting to move among as a client base were the kind of people who were either running their own business or they were managing somebody else's business, and I could see them during the day. And the other thing was they were interesting people. I was starting to move among interesting people, and I thought, how can I get access to more of these interesting people? And somebody put in my head an idea that I should maybe get involved with Yeovil Chamber. So I did. I joined in 1996. And just started going along to the networking meetings and started to get to know people. And along the way, at this time, I'd started doing some work for a local firm of solicitors, and they, the chap that I was working with, a guy called Nick Hansford, he was the master networker. He's retired now. He retired about 18 months ago, and he was the master networker. When he retired, they had a leaving do for him. I think 200 people turned up for that.
Gosh.
And there was just about everybody I knew in town, and some more, and they all knew Nick. And so it was people like Nick and other people I was meeting at the Chamber that started to allow me to get to know people in the area and get people to know me. So that's how I got into Yeovil Chamber. And it's like anything else. If you stick around long enough, people ask you to do a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. And then in 2015, the previous president, Jason Livingstone, his work had expanded to the point where he couldn't juggle the two things at the same time. And he asked me if I wanted to take over. And
prior to that, you got involved with the committee, as it were, the executive committee, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been on the executive committee since 2009, I think it was, 2008, 2009, somewhere around then. And that got me involved in the mechanics of Chamber, and it started to put me in front of stakeholders in the area. Jason was one of the first Chamber presidents I remember who started to really forge the local stakeholder and strategic relationships that kind of teed Chamber up for where it is now. So I'm grateful to Jason for that. I still see Jason now. In fact, we met on Friday to discuss some future moves for the Chamber. So yeah, I've been involved in Chamber since 1996.
And tell us about the day-by-day operation. Is it day-by-day? Do you meet weekly or monthly? Or
it's
what are the meetings and what
okay.
do you do?
There's a 15-strong executive team. Again, they're made up of volunteers, business people, and we sit around a table once a month, second Monday in the month. And I'm pleased to say that everybody around the table mucks in, because if I had to spin all the plates that I set in motion, quite a few of them would have dropped off by now. So I've got a really good team at the Chamber who muck in and help share the responsibility, the load for what Chamber is doing. In addition to that, for the members, we currently put on two series of business networking events. The regular kind of bread and butter one is speed networking. That takes place every other month, and we meet at Yeovil Golf Club, and we lock this down at 20. It's starting to sell out now, but we lock it down at 20, and we sit around a square table. It's like a corral of tables in Yeovil Golf Club. And we each tell the others what we do, and then it's a Q&A session, and people are starting to pick up a lot of business opportunities off the back of that, and that's why the attendance has started to go up on that. And just recently, we've introduced, and this is kind of an indication of where Chamber is going now with things, and I guess I'll flesh this out later. But we've just recently started a series of business leaders breakfasts, and to demonstrate the links that we have and to feed into a comment that several members have made is that they want to know on a regular basis what's going on in the big wide world about all the stuff that affects how they run their business. We started the first one April the 19th. We had John Evans, the visionary principal of Yeovil College. He came in. We had about 25 people in the room, very well attended. Some quite influential people came in for that one. The second one is coming up in June. We got Alex Palmley, the chief executive of the district council, coming in to explain how his role interacts now with the business community. I've got Paddy Ashdown lined up in October, and I'm just waiting to hear back from Sue Mount Stevens, the police and crime commissioner, to see if we can get her on board as well. So, and what we do is we just meet for breakfast, and these guys stand up and they talk and we're trying to get regional, national/national figures in that have a clear link to the Yeovil business community.
So it's not only a networking group, but it's also an information source, and it's a means of connecting with people who are able to influence the direction on a wider level.
Yeah. I somewhat ironically refer to myself as a dot joiner. My weakness is I'm not very good at actually delivering things. If you ask me to put on an event by myself, I'd probably fail miserably. Where my strengths lie is I'm somebody who's quite happy to scurry around, meet with people, bring them up to speed with what everything else is doing, and try and link people together where appropriate. And so far, it's worked. And now Yeovil Chamber, and I guess all of the strategic stakeholders that we get involved with, are all pretty much plugged into each other. And that's part of the ongoing success story that is Yeovil.
And when you picked up Yeovil Chamber, the presidency rather,
yeah,
you had a wish list.
I did, yeah.
Tell me what was on that.
Well, I'm not going to read them all out, but it's long. There was 15 points on that wish list. One of the things we were always falling down on was communication. We had a website, but it wasn't very functional. So I set about Jason started this prior to me. We changed the website, and I was heavily involved in the changeover process. So I got to know the guys on the new website, and I determined once that was set up that if I ever got the presidency, I would make that the hub of everything we do. And that's happened. And I We've improved our communications. That was a big complaint that was levelled at us by members. We never knew what was going on. One way of doing it is by the networking events, which I've already mentioned. But another way we do this now is by sending out regular communications to tell the members. Just keep them updated with everything that's going on. And where it comes into play as a real benefit is with the roadworks. We're in constant touch with the main contractors for the Western Corridor works in Yeovil, and historically we've been in contact with the contractors and Somerset County Council for the previous round of roadworks, shall we say.
Have there been roadworks in Yeovil? I haven't noticed.
I noticed the tone of your voice there, Terry, and I kind of agree with that. But this is where the communication has come in. The Western Gazette very kindly let me loose on their pages back in January. I knew what was coming because I'd been briefed by Somerset County Council. I got into the paper. They allowed me to do 500 words just saying to people, look, here's why the roadworks are here. You've got to let them happen. If we don't, this town will be on its knees. So don't bash the town. Let's support the town through this. It's not going to last forever, and when it's gone, things will be better. And that's been borne out partly by the success of the Eastern Corridor. You probably go through the Lyde Junction several times a week.
I do.
You do. And would you say it works better than previously?
Reluctantly, yes.
And I use the hospital roundabout almost daily, and that is working a lot better. And during the time when those works were being done, there was a lot of knocking Yeovil going on. And I used to say to people, off the record, I used to say, look, if you send out signals that Yeovil is a town under siege, nobody's going to come here.
Quite right.
So it was a case of just ride through this, manage the situation, you know, leave longer for your journeys, go a different route, just change what you do temporarily. It'll all be worth it. And as we've seen with the Eastern Corridor, arguably it has been worth it. And interestingly, since that PR campaign that we drove through the local papers and other local media, I personally haven't had a single complaint about the roadworks at the Western Corridor. And they'll be going on till March 2019.
I sense there's another hour-long programme here, possibly a phone-in on the roadworks in Yeovil.
Love
and
to.
We could extend that to Sherborne, actually.
I'd love
well.
To. Yeah, they can ask me about the empty shops as well. I've got plenty of reasons why that's
well,
been...
Well, I was going to come on to that sort
yeah,
of
okay.
thing. Time is marching on.
It is.
What are the main challenges facing business in Yeovil at the moment? Wide question, I know.
It's a good question because I feel... from where I'm sat, that businesses are actually on top of this and leading the charge in Yeovil. The challenges, I think, are the big ones. It's about the big money now. Yeovil has got to the point where there has been a lot of private investment going in behind the scenes. Western Gazette offices is one. There's been private investment there. There's been private investment in a set of offices in Church Street, and to the Western Gazette and Church Street are being turned into residential. There has been £14 million pumped in the last 2 years on these roadworks that I've been talking about, and about to start taking shape on the south western corner of Leonardo Airfield is an aerospace R&D facility called iAero, and Somerset County Council have seen fit to pump £11 million pounds into that, and that's about to start. The diggers are about to go on the ground for that one, and it's almost like somebody in central government had a crystal ball back in about 7-8 years ago, because at the time they foisted on us, I think it's nearly 4,000 new houses by 2026, and everybody threw their hands up and they said, where the hell are all these people going to work? But since then, the town has risen to that challenge, certainly in the business community, that's for sure. And then in rapid succession, we had the investment in the roads, we had the investment in the iAero, we've got private investment coming into town. So the challenge, if you like, is grasping all of the opportunities that are being presented to the town.
Walking through the centre of Yeovil,
yeah,
as I have been for quite a number of years, it's changed a lot. There's a lot of charity shops. There's quite a few coffee shops.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's quite a few empty units as well.
Yeah.
Why so?
Why so? It's Yeovil is not unique. I will stress that right from the outset. Yeovil is by no means unique. The national average for empty shops in a regional town centre of Yeovil's size is about 15 to 20%, and Yeovil is about there. I'm reliably informed by members of the retail community that the situation in the high street has finally bottomed out, or it's beginning to bottom out. I don't believe it's going to get any worse. And the charity shops all arrived because they filled the void, because they had low business rates. They filled the void and took up empty units. But the crucial thing is that Yeovil is beginning to reinvent itself. What's happened in the last 10 years, two factors came in. We had the financial meltdown in 2008-2009 and the internet. And those two factors alone has, I think, what's the word, made extinct the old business model that town centres used to have. And that was people go into town to shop and go home. Not now. Retail now is a significant enhancement to other experiences that people go into towns for. For example, people will go into town to meet, to socialise, to do business, and to just spend time. So we have to make it attractive for people to come into town. We're starting to do that already. Yeovil Chamber has a kind of offshoot called Love Yeovil. Love Yeovil is tasked with ideas for bringing people into town. And what we do is we devise, promote and deliver events in town. Give you three examples. Yeovil Half Marathon, the Super Saturday and the Christmas Light Switch On. And they're bringing people into town. The retailers are getting on board with this. Only Saturday we had Boswell's in the Quidam. New arrivals at the Quidam. They had a charity sports day. I didn't attend myself. I've seen the photos on social media. It was absolutely rammed in the Quidam. And of course that benefits the retailers.
Absolutely.
So people are coming to town for different reasons. And Yeovil is ahead of a lot of other towns around here, in as much as it understands the nature of the high street, it understands the situation's bottom out isn't going to get worse, and businesses are starting to adapt.
Dave, we could talk a lot longer on this. We'll come back and pick that up a moment, but let's have your penultimate track, which is Radiohead.
Yeah,
and tell us about this one.
Radiohead. This for me, I had this the album, The Bends, on in the car for years. And I just listened to it over and over and over again. And as a songwriter, I managed to pull bits and pieces out of that, no end. And that's why it stayed in the car so long, was because I'd be listening to it. And I'd go home and I'd think, oh yeah, I remember that bit. And I'd use that in a song. And it's one of those albums where, personally, I think there's not a bad track on it. So I had to pick one off this. And again, this is another one with a great dynamic to it. Loud, quiet. And this is the Bends.
This is The Bends and Radiohead. Let's have it.
Where do we go from here? The words are coming out of wind. Where are you now? When I need you. Alone on an aeroplane. Falling asleep against the window pane. My blood will thin. Scared that there's nothing underneath. Who are my real friends? Have they all got the bends? Am I really sinking? They're slow. My baby's got the bends. Oh no. We don't have any real friends. No, no. Talking to my girlfriend, waiting for something to happen. I wish it was the 60s, I wish we could be happy. I wish that something would happen. Where do I go from here?
That's Radiohead and The Bends from 1995. And nice. Dave Wone was enjoying that. Dave's my guest in the studio for Folk Tales.
Hi, Terry.
And it's running late, Dave. But we'll go a few minutes over.
Okay.
I'm sure the people at Sky News won't mind.
Good.
But anyway, we've been talking about the challenges of running a business in Yeovil. You've mentioned the internet,
yeah,
which has had a profound effect on business, not just in, yeah, Yeovil, but every town centre up and down the country and,
yeah,
probably beyond it.
Yeah.
How does the smart business owner cope with the internet?
The smart business owner they make it part of the way they run their business. I'll give you a great example. I bought a printer the other day, about two months ago. I spent 20 minutes on the internet, on eBay, found the printer I wanted, said, yes, I'll have that, and it went click and collect at Argos. So what happened? 2 hours later, I was in Yeovil. I picked up my printer. Goodness knows how they knew I was coming in. You know, it must be like the TARDIS out the back there with all that stuff. And anyway, I came in, I picked the printer up, and while I was in town, I did some other stuff. So not only did Argos benefit from me coming into town, but the town also benefited from me being there and doing other stuff.
And you went and had a coffee while you were there, probably.
That's it. Mm. And the new independent businesses that are coming in use the internet and social media to drive their proposition. The old business model is gone. That old idea where somebody sets up a stall and stands at the back of the shop with their arms folded and the door wide open, waiting for someone to come in, are gone. You know, I can say that with some degree of confidence. And any business that adopts that now is asking for trouble, because it's about using the internet and social media to drive people to your door. Another good example is Marks and Spencer in town. I speak with the manager of Marks and Spencer's regularly, and their turnover, a large proportion of their turnover now is internet related.
And there's a certain element of going and looking at something in a town and then going home and buying it on the internet, of course,
yeah,
which may or may not benefit the
retailer. Well, I don't fully understand that bit of it, but I think it's the and someone might like to sort of drop me a line on this one and clear my head on this if I get this wrong, but I get the idea that if you go to, say, Marks and Spencer's, you go home after feeling the goods in the shop, you order it up, and the search engine links you geographically to that store, and it benefits that store. I don't know.
So that's a particular facet of Marks and Spencer's, they're able to link that back.
Well, I don't know. That's my kind of understanding of it, but I don't know. As I said, if there are any listeners out there want to correct me on that, and indeed, yeah, give me some insight into that, because I'm a little bit short of information, drop me a line at president@yeovilchamber.org.
Get the plug in, absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, there's a bit of a perception that businesses are, or retailers in the middle of towns, are being driven out by high business rates and unreasonable rents. Is that the case?
Well, the businesses that have been driven out were, I guess, partly couldn't cope with the rather archaic and still rather archaic business rate system. But despite the bad press that business rates get, we have businesses, I wouldn't say queuing up to get into Yeovil, but there is I speak with a commercial property developer regularly, and he is always talking to prospective tenants. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to sell Yeovil as a bit like I am. He's selling Yeovil, and people are wanting to come in. We're getting new kids on the block all the time, mainly to do with coffee shops and leisure type arrangements. I mentioned Boswell's earlier on. There is a new gym that's just opened in the Quidam. And people often level the criticism side by side with empty shops about, why are all these coffee shops in town? The simple answer is they're there because the opportunity exists. I spoke to the manager of Boswell's not 2 weeks ago, and he said, we're the latest arrival. And he said, we're one of the biggest. But they're there because they see the opportunity. There is plenty to go around for all these coffee shops because, as I said, the reason why people are coming into town is to dwell and spend time and socialise. And one of the plans we've got in Yeovil is to build more residential in town so that people live and work in town. The town centres have changed forever. And Yeovil, I have to say, and I'm pleased to say, is reinventing itself.
OK, I'm a successful retailer in Bristol. I've got a couple of shops in Bristol. Yeah. I've decided I want to spread my wings and go to another town somewhere in the southwest. Why would I choose Yeovil rather than Taunton or even Exeter or Dorchester or Salisbury or wherever it may be?
Well, firstly, for the reasons I've just said about it's the perception and the opportunity. We have empty units, and we have a town centre that is encompassing change. In other words, it's with the retailers and the other businesses in town, it's using the internet and social media to drive the modern high street. But one of there are two key statistics I read off the Barclays Insight website just recently, that the leisure sector, the spending in that sector is 15% up in Yeovil. The turnover for hospitality type businesses is up by 17%, and they are clear indicators that there's something going on in Yeovil, and that's not the reason, but that's another reason why people come to town. One of the things I've been doing as well to smooth the wheels is I've been working with the district council and commercial estate agent in town to be in touch with landlords to get them to make the leasing arrangements for the buildings more flexible. Okay. So again, there's no long-term lease, inflexible lease that you're buying into when you come into town. Is get out clauses and flexibility.
Dave, we've run over time already. So we better draw this interview to a close before we get in trouble.
I don't want Rupert Murdoch chasing me down.
That's right. But let's just talk about you outside your very successful, now I imagine quite time-consuming involvement with the Yeovil Chamber.
It's a wild animal.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Hanging on.
So what do you do to relax?
Do a bit of photography. I'm a very keen amateur photographer. I do a bit of running. I counted them up before I came over, 2 full marathons, and to date, 12 half marathons. I managed to do one half marathon every year. I've done every one of the Yeovil half marathons except 2012. And I did the 2 full marathons back in 2010 and 2011. That was a bridge too far. I don't need to be doing those again. And photography, mum and dad bought me a Kodak Instamatic when I was 15. I think that was mainly to stop me messing about with their camera, being ADHD and everything. I wanted to look inside it and all that kind of thing. So they bought me a camera and off it went. And I kind of gone from there.
Okay. Let's draw it to a close and have your final track. Tell us about this one. It's Vaughan Williams, this.
Yes, this is Vaughan Williams from the English Folk Song Suite. It's the third movement, and it's not listed as this on the album, but this is called the Folk Songs of Somerset. And Vaughan Williams was he was very adept at pulling all sorts of influences from English folk music into the classical arena. The most famous of his is Greensleeves, and then there's the theme on the theme Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis, which was to do with church music. And everybody knows Lark Ascending. Yeah. But this is my personal favourite, and this is a terrific track to drive to. This is the third movement, the march from the Folk Songs of Somerset, and it's a fantasia using Blow Away the Morning Dew, High Germany and John Barleycorn, and this is Folk Songs
we've
of Somerset.
Got it playing in the background now. Okay. We'll fade it up. And just to say, Dave, thank you very much for coming in. I love your passion for what you do. We wish you well in your own business and with the Chamber. And we look forward to speaking to you again.
My pleasure.
Thank you.